Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, ready to enlighten you and tickle your fancy with little tales of nerddom that have popped up around the geek world since our last podcast. If you missed it, what are you doing with your time? You should spend it watching us interview our sponsors. Susie Q's, who is this spectacular, talented weaver of metal arts, who creates jewelry and fine wares, you wear them. So yes, if you haven't watched our interview with Susie, it is on our YouTube channel, and it's under 5280 Geek. You can also go to our podcast page on Facebook, on Podbean, iHeartRadio. We are on all the platforms you like to listen to your podcasts too. And Susie, who is no longer a non-podcaster, she came in last week, did a spectacular job, showed us armor, showed us like all sorts of stuff. We talked heavy on the nerd side, and it was a blast. So go to her Facebook page, Susie Q's, or you can go to her web page, which is susieq's.com, in addition to her Instagram, which is, yes, you guessed it, Susie Q's. There is a link in the post to go to her page. She does her own blog, and we talked off mic, and she's got stuff that's going on, so I'm hoping that her plans and everything that she's got into the works comes to fruition, because I'm excited to see this, and I'm sure you would not be disappointed by following her blog and keeping up to date with what she's got going on. And yeah, it's fun. It's adventures in nerding, and it's unlike anything else, because there's nothing else going on right now. The lockdown has still kept everybody kind of verklempt, but things are already starting to look up. The All Seas Fan Expo has announced a couple of guests. This is a free con that will be happening in June. We posted a link on the page to show the first two guests that they introduced, and it's off to the races. The expo is free, so you know, a cool chance to go in and see Coco Beware, the Birdman from WWF fame. I'm excited. I've never met Coco Beware. I'm very curious to meet this man. I'm excited to interview him. So be here in June when I get to sit down and interview the Birdman. It's going to be fun. I can't wait. PJ will probably be there with me. Ryan might be. I don't know if he's going to be floating around for that day. So anyway, but Red will be with us at the con, in addition to Susie will also be with us at the Fan Expo. So come down, say hi, pick up a few things from Susie. Check out Red's boo, who is on fire. Well, no, I guess you can't say he's on fire. That's just a wrong image for poor little Boo. but Red's been working hard on stuff for Boo, and you need to come down and check us out just to say hi. And, you know, maybe I'll even have a couple of special edition T-shirts. Yes, just might. But you got to come by and check that out. What else is going on? Oh, and Rocky Mountain Con, they have put out dates. They have everything ready to go, and now it's the game of Guest Who. You have the opportunity to send in requests. Tim is taking any ideas for comic book guests that you may want to see, and it's been kind of fun. People are, of course, throwing out like the softball pitches of, you know, this, that, or the other, but it's just kind of fun to see who everyone is very interested to see. Of course, my list is very, I don't know, my list I don't think is different, but it's just kind of like one of those, I don't know who I really would want to see. And it's kind of like that back and forth of, do I want this person? Do I want that person? What do I want signed? What do I want, you know, for on a blank cover? The little kid in me is just jumping up and down with excitement of who and what to suggest and who we just might get. it's that anticipation. It's like every Wednesday when we get new comics. What else? Oh, the championship of all championships has happened. It is in the box. It is over. And a dynasty, it looks, is in the making as Cinnamon Toast Crunch pulls ahead and dominates the bracket this year for Munch Madness. They are victorious yet again. They were there were doubts. Cookie Crisp did put up a valiant battle. They did not want to give up. They kept coming back, and it looked like in the wee hours of the match that Cookie Crisp may have pulled ahead, but yet again, Cinnamon Toast Crunch has the staying power and pulls ahead. Wendell is beside himself with excitement and wants to shower the world in cinnamon and sugar. The picture is up on our Facebook page. Go check it out. See Wendell's happy little face in the bracket. So there you go. There's your winner. Thank you for participating in this year's Munch Madness. We'll be back next year with another round edition of Munch Madness. Who knows who will make it to the bracket? Who will be ignored? Who's going to try and fight for redemption? Can Wendell be taken down? That is the question. Is Cinnamon Toast Crunch the end-all, be-all of breakfast cereal? I don't know. I mean, he's been pretty much an unstoppable force. So, and we can't not have him. I mean, that's just sacrilegious. So, it's a question of what kind of dynasty is this? Is this going to keep going? Is there a chance of someone beating him? I don't think so. I think it'd be hard pressed. I think it'd be difficult. So, check it out. And thank you again for participating and voting on our Instagram, on our Facebook, on our webpage. It was great. And if you are not subscribing to us on our YouTube channel, please do. Give us a like, give us a share, give us some love, because we're working hard for you. Now, moving on to the stuff that has caught my eye, my take on some of the nerd topics that I have seen sweeping across the web and the scrolling of the Facebook. There are a couple of things. Before we get to some of the stuff that's caught my eye, let's dive in to The Walking Dead. This was the season finale for season 10.3. Yes, this was the finale. So now it's on to season 11. And wow. So my take on this whole thing. It's actually not as disparaging as you would think. I'm not upset. I'm not angry. And to be extremely honest with you, I think this is probably the best part of season 10. As much as I enjoy the war, the battle with the Whisperers, there are just I don't know. Maybe it was just more creepier in the comic, or it just had a larger impact. Because it just seemed rushed. It seemed so, you know, just there, boom, done. So maybe that's why I'm kind of like, meh, all right, it's over, fine, the fallout. And there's going to be fallout as, you know, Hilltop's burnt to destroyed, Alexandria destroyed, there's no food, the wildlife is decimated. So it's a very interesting time for the characters. Now, what I enjoyed the most about this whole .3 season was the dive into all of the characters. Last night, we saw the backstory of Negan, and everybody has been anxiously awaiting the story. And it is basically a story of two Negans. Really, three Negans, because you have the Negan now, you have the Negan he was, and then you have the Negan after the fall. So it's very interesting to see how they integrate these different positions that Negan is in psychologically, in addition to just as a status from where he was as far as like his normal life as, you know, a muggle, and then the fall, him taking care of his wife. And it's very intricate, and it's very layered as far as the episode. is it the best episode of season 10.3? I'm going to say no, really. And there's a specific reason why it's not the best episode for season 10.3. And it's simply because it just, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't say I expected more, but we didn't go as deep into Negan as I was hoping or was thinking. And to Red's point that she has made multiple times, Negan is just a man. He's nothing, you know. He's no longer the boogeyman once you know the secrets. Once you see him in the light, you know. So when you get the story, it's see, because I always had my own theory of Negan. I honestly thought that he was like a regional retail manager, just how he was organized, how he would get people together, how he would get, you know, people stepped in line, how he would empower people to be Negan. It just really honestly felt like one of those seminars that you would go to when you used to work retail back in the day of, you know, the pep rallies, the people, you know, go out there and now sell some junk. Gotta make your quota, you know? And it just felt like that's kind of what he was, and it was just like taken to that much more of an extreme. Now, to get Negan to the point of him being a gym teacher, okay, I see it. It's still that organization, that team sports, the, you know, playing and working well with others. Okay, I get it. Not everybody, you know, was glamorous rock stars or sheriffs like, you know, other characters in The Walking Dead. Is Negan less impactful or powerful now that you know his backstory? It's an excellent question. And I honestly don't know. I really think there are sometimes stories are best left unsaid, that they're better untold, because you're always your own worst driving force in stories. Alfred Hitchcock was famous for, you know, letting you kind of extrapolate your own fears and thoughts into the story to make things that much more terrifying, because you can think of a lot more worse things than what is actually coming through. The story is very touching, don't get me wrong, and it's heartbreaking to see Negan just like fall, but not fall once. I mean, he continually just fell short of the mark. He isn't what you would call a successful person, and he seemed kind of sketch, kind of average, maybe even below average in some regards. But he stepped up when he needed to. He was present, kind of, when he was supposed to be. So there are some redeeming factors to Negan. But the story that still stands out of this last part of season 10 is still with Andrew and Gabriel. I still think that that's probably one of the most revealing and telling stories that we got for the entire season 10. And I think that that's spectacular. This is what I always wanted to see. I always wanted to see the world as it was, you know, crumbling. God, that sounds horrible. But, you know, as it's coming down, how are the people reacting to it? And is there any way to bring it back? I like the stuff that we saw with Princess and Eugene and the stormtroopers that I'm sure we will see more of. I know we will see more of in the upcoming season 11, because that is basically the final story arc in the comic. And that is very intriguing to me, because I don't know how they're going to do that storyline, because there's a lot of key characters that are missing, that are not here now. So unless there's a major reveal or there's something different that comes along, we will see. This is a very I think it's an impactful episode. Don't get me wrong, I liked it a lot, and the ending is very fitting. And actually it really holds to what and who Negan is. He's not that we know. This is the Negan we know now, that he's not a quitter. He's not going to give up. He's in this, and his motivations still remain his. We don't know what's going to happen, and there's definitely going to be some kind of knockdown dragout between him and Maggie. And at the end of it, I mean, because it's funny, because in the comic, when we finally get the final story from Negan, he's in a cabin. He's just kind of, you know, sitting there, and he's off on his own, and we get kind of like a bit of a story as far as whatever happened to Negan. And I'm wondering if that's kind of what's going to happen here for season 11, or exactly how that's going to break down. It's anyone's guess. Everything has changed. The landscaping has changed. The characters are no longer the same. But, you know, we do have a score sheet, so we'll keep track the best we can. And, of course, I'll be here to help you out. But that's just kind of my thoughts for The Walking Dead Season 10.3. Moving on. Oh, my God. So, what do I want to talk about first? First of all, if you're not watching Invincible, you need to. The comic was absolutely nuts. And to see what they're doing, it's basically just ripped right from the pages of the comic book onto the screen. There are some changes. There are some subtle differences, especially when you can't use all of the characters from Image's arsenal. So there are characters that are key that show up throughout the story that are missing, but the major elements are still the same. And if you're not watching this, oh my God, you're missing out. The boys there's very close similarities, and I think the only thing saving this show from just being so over the top is that it's animated, because if this was real, holy crap, even the boys would be like, damn, that was just brutal. J.K. Simmons as Omni-Man is perfect. The cast and the voice actors in this series have been so well casted, so well done, and it's so well executed. There are I don't know how many episodes. We're in, I think, up to episode 4, and they're roughly about 45-50 minutes. So you get your full worth. It's not like shorter episodes. It's not like the Disney where you're like, well, that sucked. I only got 30 minutes and 5 minutes of it is credits. So they really have taken the time to put together decently, you know, spaced episodes. So you're getting some good quality stuff. And Lord knows if you've never watched or if you've never read this comic, you're in for a very interesting ride. I'm almost a little envious because I've read the comics and I know what's expected. I know kind of what's coming. It's been a while since I've read Invincible, so I'm a little foggy on some points, but I still remember the overall story. So if you're not watching it, please do. And if you can find the trades, I think they're still available. The issues itself have shot up through the roof. It has gone ridiculously crazy. In fact, we're approaching quickly the Walking Dead issue 1 numbers as far as monetary means. And if you're sitting on an Invincible number 1, good for you. Go digging in your comics, because it may be sitting in there. Who knows? Got to check it out. Oh, what else? So I did sit down and watched Godzilla vs. King Kong. And from a fan standpoint, I'm okay with it. I know we will have a meat and potatoes review of it this week, so don't miss out on that. And I don't know. There are points on it that I'm like, eh. And there are other points where I'm like, okay. To be fair, the last time that Godzilla and King Kong faced off was 1946. Or, yeah, it was like the 40s, something like that, if I'm not mistaken. And the Godzilla suit was just horrific. It didn't even look, or not Godzilla suit, the King Kong suit looked horrific. It didn't even look like King Kong. It looked like a bad Sasquatch costume that, you know, for, you know, jamming with Sasquatch, screwing with Sasquatch, kicking King Kong's ass. It was, there are some good points and some bad points. And no spoilers, there were monster fights, And yes, King Kong and Godzilla duked it out, and as they should. They're rivaling, you know, alpha monsters. This is the way it should be. And it went exactly how I thought it was going to go. There are a couple of surprises and things that I'm like scratching my head. I'm sure it's no surprise now. Mechagodzilla is in this film, and we kind of speculated that when we saw the very first trailer last year. So it's no big surprise that Mecha shows up. The nature of how Mechagodzilla shows up is a little wonky, and I'm not exactly pleased with that portion of it, but okay. And then, like I said, no spoilers. You watch it. I would love your input or thoughts on it as far as if you thought it was a good way to bring out Mechagodzilla, or if you were more like me and hoping that it would pay tribute and homage to Aliens and the actual story that we got from Mechagodzilla, which is fine. I did like it. Don't get me wrong. Will I watch it again? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not rushing back to watch it. I'll put it that way. maybe I'll watch a couple of fights, you know, and just kind of fast forward over the human bits. But it is definitely two different stories. I do like Team Kong a lot more than I liked Team Zilla, just because I mean, Millie Bobby Brown does a wonderful job as an actress. I don't care for her sidekick. I just don't like him as an actor. He's just kind of whiny to me, and he's that kid from Deadpool 2. So maybe it's just he's that good of an actor that he's just invoked an emotional response from me because I didn't like him in Deadpool, and I really don't like him in this. So, eh. But the whole story makes sense. It does. And the Hollow Earth theory is spectacular. That is where I'm hoping this builds up and kind of escalates to more Kong stories, another Godzilla film. My overall love, and I know this is going to sound strange, is Gamera. I really want a Gamera monster. I would love the giant turtle. I want a Gamera. And I thought we might get it, especially when, you know, we're talking about dealing with Mechagodzilla, space, and all of that. So, and especially when Monster Zero is from outer space and he's not from this planet. But I digress. The special effects and everything were okay. There were some sections that seemed rushed or they had problems with technical issues. And I, after talking to everybody, I wasn't the only one that saw the kind of like weird ghosting and pixelization of the special effects. But it's a decent fight, especially between Kong and Godzilla. It's when Mechagodzilla and Godzilla face off that I'm kind of like, that was more WWF than Monster, in my opinion. But okay, I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, to be honest with you. Maybe more missiles from Mechagodzilla, more tricks, more just really be a handful. But didn't get that. So, is it worth watching? Yes, absolutely. And I think it's a great, well, I don't know if I go as far as great. I think it's a very good follow-up to King of Monsters. As far as a follow-up to Skull Island, maybe not as much. You really have to pay attention to figure out and listen to what happened to Skull Island and why Kong is where he is. It's slipped in under the dialogue. And if you're not paying attention, you can miss it. So do be aware of that. But all in all, it's a Godzilla movie. I never thought we'd see more Godzilla films. So anything I can get after the Matthew Broderick travesty, I'm all for. what else? Oh, so let's dive in. Let's do this because, oh, I know, and I'll be the first one to admit it, I had doubts. I seriously did. Falcon and Winter Soldier was not one of the shows on Disney Plus that I was looking forward to. I I've never been a Falcon fan, I know. And some of the Winter Soldier stories have found kind of pandering and just kind of like, well, we've got this character and we don't know what to do with them. So let's just make him a spy. Let's just throw him out there and see what happens. So I've never really been a fan of either character. But as we have started to dive into this espionage-filled world, and we are starting to see characters that I honestly did not expect or see, and landscapes that I am absolutely stunned that we're going to. First off, again, I'll do my best for no spoilers, but for the comic book fans out there, I'm sure if you are unaware of Madripoor, don't be ashamed. It is a hive of villainy that is unlike anything else in the Marvel Universe. It is like Tortuga in Pirates of the Caribbean. It is where all the bad people hang out. The Hand is there. All of the ninjas from that, the Yakuza clans, it is like the epitome of just anything evil just lives there. And it is synonymous with Wolverine and his Patch character. So when Wolverine is like incognito, Superman, you know, has his glasses, Wolverine has his eye patch, and he goes and hangs out in Madripoor. It's makes total sense. There are so many things in the background. There's so many Easter eggs that it is really hard to keep score and track, and the mind begins to sway, and you just get swept up in the, ooh, what about this? Or, ooh, and you start scanning, like, what's going on in the background more than the actual content of what's happening in front of you. The director that does John Wick also directed this episode, and you can definitely feel his influence and that grittiness and that atmosphere that he brings to John Wick. You definitely, it is palpable in this episode of Winter Soldier and Falcon. Falcon and Winter Soldier. Falcon and the Snowman. I was just so excited. I wanted so much more. And I was just waiting for the whole episode of them just wandering around Madripoor, getting into trouble, and just seeing who could pop up. And we don't get any major reveals as far as characters are concerned. There are some other stuff that I don't want to give away, but as far as like major reveals or anything along that nature, nothing yet. It's more subtle. It's more building, especially when you're watching Baron Zemo, and we do get him as a title, Baron Zemo. It is so, so exciting. But I think, and this is one of my theories, that we will see the Thunderbolts. The Thunderbolts comic book was one of my favorites, as we saw villains and people. And it's basically the Marvel's version of the Suicide Squad. So you've got these guys that are working for the government to redeem themselves. And it is put together by Baron Zemo. It's perfect. It's absolutely one of my favorite beginning story superhero teams. It didn't end strongly. And there was a time that Luke Cage was running the Thunderbolts, and it is what it is, and it's fine. But the original start of the Thunderbolts was spectacular, and I have a feeling that we could be seeing this, especially with what's kind of looming on the horizon. If Marvel does hold to its schedule or rumored schedule, Armor Wars coming, there is a good chance that we could see the Beetle, who ends up going over and being part of the Thunderbolts. And it just felt like it. Like, I could just, it felt more like the Thunderbolts than it did Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It really did. Like, this is ridiculous. And it was brilliant. It was so well done. So I think we're about the halfway point now, because we don't have nearly as many episodes for this series as we did for Scarlet Witch, WandaVision, which is fine. You can't expect to run all the same length, and they're packing a lot into it. The pace is definitely quickened from WandaVision. Thank God, because I don't think you could take this series as slowly as the other one, because it was just, it would just weigh you down. You'd just be like, God, can just something happen, please? The banter between Falcon and Winter Soldier are actually really, is really good. I'm really enjoying that dynamic, and it really does feel like Lethal Weapon. It so does. It's a buddy cop, and especially with Baron Zemo now, you know, taking on the role of Joe Pesci. Yes, I said it. He's the Joe Pesci of the group now. It works well, and I'm waiting to see. I'm excited to see what we have, especially with the cliffhanger that we were left with this week. And I was right about this, because we were talking about this on the other podcast as far as Wakanda getting involved, and I knew it was only a matter of time, because it only makes sense, especially with where the direction this story is going. So if you're not watching it, you should. And I'm definitely on board for this. So if you're a speculator of any shape, reason, or style, Thunderbolts number one is definitely something you want to pick up. It probably is decent, reasonable price. I don't know. I haven't looked at Thunderbolts in ages, to be honest with you. So if you're of the speculating nature, now is the time to go check it out. And speaking of speculation, the new trailer for Loki, which is set to come out in June, has finally given Owen Wilson's character his name, and it is Mr. Mobius M. Mobius. His first appearance actually is in Fantastic Four 353. So, again, if you're a speculator of any size or shape, that's the one you want to go after. And especially since that starts the major time agency story in the comic. So they are pulling, they're doing some deep dives for this, and unfortunately, I was wrong, we're not getting Mojoverse. I thought Mojoverse would have been fun, don't you? But it's fine. I'm okay with the time agency. This Byrne, was it Byrne? I think it was Byrne. Did this storyline for the Fantastic Four, and it is absolutely brilliant. So if you're in the mood, and I'm sure as soon as the announced Owen Wilson's character's name, I'm sure everybody scrambled for that comic. So I still think that Loki will be the best of the three, especially now that we've kind of gotten a whole better feel of what the story is, him being part of the time agency, the splintering and basically cracking of the timeline. I want a jacket that, like Loki has, it says variant on the back. I think that is absolutely awesome. That is, I already know that that's going to come back to bite him in the ass, but I just think that that is just so well placed. Just like, variant. That's funny. But what does, I mean, I'm so excited to see what they do with this. But the trailer gives us some, I mean, and right now it's all speculation, of course, but the trailer is worth watching. I'll put that up into the link so you guys can check it out on the Facebook page, or not Facebook page, on our webpage, 5280geek.com. It'll be up there, as well as this trailer. It came out very late, well, I guess not late, but kind of midday, because it's First Contact Day on Monday, and it was like just a cool celebration for Star Trek and all of the different first contacts that have happened. And in this, they do a major drop for Picard Season 2. And it is major in the way that when you think of Star Trek, you ought to, or Next Generation anyway, there's always that pull of what two villains probably stand out the most. If it's not the Borg, it's always Q. And he started the series, he ended the series, and now he's actually making his appearance in the show. It doesn't come as a surprise, because I know we've talked about it before with John DeLance kind of slipping out there as far as saying, you know, Q could be coming, you know, subtle hints, things that people are like taking for granted, like, nah, it'll never happen. It's happening, and we will get Q. I'm very anxious to see how they develop this story. In fact, on Will Wheaton's podcast, or I think it was a video cast, he had Patrick Stewart on and John DeLance to talk about the new season of Picard and John DeLance getting back into Q form. Of course, he says that that's a lot easier than you think. So, all right, I believe him. So I'm really, and but there's so many elements that they're talking about as far as like time, and if you remember like the final episode for Next Gen, there was that like a whole different time cascading, you know, into each other for different time periods, and I'm very curious. And of course, Picard, Patrick Stewart going on the talk show that Whoopi Goldberg was on and asking her if she would be interested in joining a season two of Picard is even more like building in my mind of, are we finally going to get the story between Guinan and Q? So, because that was always alluded at, but we never ever got any further information as far as her race, why, you know, the two of them don't like each other. So I don't know. It really raises a lot of questions. I'm excited to see it. We won't see it until 2022, according to the dates that I saw, which is kind of disappointing. I want this now. I really do. I know that there's plenty of other things to watch right now, and I my plate's already full. I don't have enough time to watch half the shit that I'm supposed to be watching, and the shit that I am that I'm like, I need to get to that. But it's just so well done. I'm excited. I'm a nerd, and I'm excited about Star Trek. Who knew? Oh, what else? This actually caught my eye. For the comic book guys out there, Lock and Key and the Sandman crossover, they actually have kind of finally put some information out there in regards to when we're going to finally see an issue, how long those issues are going to be, and what to kind of expect. So this is basically so the Golden Age, which collects a set of single issue stories and short miniseries that explores the past of Key House and various keys forged with the mythical Whispering Iron. The three-issue miniseries, Impaled Battalions, reveals the role of the keys during World War I, with the Sandman crossover having Mary Locke descend to hell to save her brother Jack's soul close to the decade after the war. Hill reveals this larger story will be compiled together. And this is what Hill said directly. Eventually be collected as Lock and Key, the Golden Age. The first chapter of that will be Smart World, then into Open the Moon, Impaled Battalions Go. God, that's a horribly tongue-twisting title. And then a secret story no one knows about that's part of the Golden Age. That's called Face the Music, and then the Sandman crossover. Hill elaborates. The Sandman crossover alone is 80 pages, but there's almost another 80 pages of material that's the best of the book. So he's basically telling us we're going to get two issues that are going under the Sandman universe, Hell and Gone. So you can get the issues that will be actually released from IDW April 14th is what they're saying. And then they will be collected in what they're saying is the six continuation. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. Yeah. So you can wait for the collected, and it'll be the Golden Age. That'll be out after these two issues hit. But I don't want to wait for the trade and read them all together. I'm fine with just reading these two. And I think I've already read, because I know they did like a mashup Sandman Lock and Key issue 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And it was reprints of other stuff. There was, I don't think, anything original in that one until you got to like the final few pages and there was some new content. So it was just kind of like a rehash and brought you up to date. Because I've already read the other stories that Hill listed that will be in this trade and the arc for this story. But I'm excited to see Hell and Gone number one, which goes on sale April 14th. So we will see that actually really soon. What's today? Yeah. We're already into April, so give it a couple weeks and something to keep your eye out on. Also, in comic book news, Mark Millar. You may know that name, and you may know it, and you don't realize why. Wanted, which was a movie with Angelina Jolie that was a very loose adaptation of Mark Millar's Wanted series in the comics, which is a very brutal comic series. He's done a lot of stuff, and one of his recent comics has been snatched up by Netflix, called Jupiter's Legacy. And I love Mark's stories. Huck, which was absolutely just a great story. In fact, I'm never really disappointed with Mark's storytelling and what he brings to comics. So when I heard that Jupiter's Legacy got picked up by Netflix, really kind of perked my interest. So again, if you're a speculator, you're a collector, you better go pick up some Jupiter's Legacy, because the 7th, tomorrow, the trailer for the series is going to drop. And I have a feeling that this is going to go like gangbusters. Again, it's another kind of very interesting story in the comic book side, and without seeing what they're going to do, because Jupiter's Legacy does do a very huge overarching story with some very key and interesting components laced throughout the story. So without getting into too deep of a dive, which I'm not going to do, because I don't know. Without seeing the trailer, I can only kind of guesstimate what we're going to see based on reading the comic. The comic is fun. It's very interesting. And, without giving anything away, definitely tomorrow, check it out. We'll see what happens with this, and I'm curious if we're going to, because Jupiter's Legacy really involves like this one particular family, but it goes like generational. So we start with like the parents and the children and then the grandchildren, and it's just like this overall intricate storytelling that Mark put together for this. And each series kind of is focused on different age group as the story progresses, and there's other twisted crazy shit going on, and I don't want to give anything away on it. Just wait, watch the trailer tomorrow. It's absolutely where to go. What else got my eye? Lucifer in May, and they wrapped filming for season 6. So Lucifer's done, and now we just have to wait patiently. I'm curious to see how they get through the last episode with Allstate guy showing up. That's right. God runs the insurance company. Who knew? It absolutely makes total sense. At least it wasn't Neil Gaiman kind of coming in, because I know he did voice God in a couple of episodes, and there's one episode that, you know, he did the whole voiceover as God. But I think the Allstate guy, way better of a choice. Allstate. What else? That kind of wraps up for this week. Yeah. Simple, easy, in, out. Again, thank you for listening. Give us a like. Give us a share. We're always here. If you've got comments, questions, or things that you just want answers to, by all means, put it in the comments below, and we'll get to them. I'll get to them. And in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.